Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, March the 16th, 2017. I have 7:02 p.m. I'd like to call our council meeting to order. Tonight, the pledge will be given by Councilmember Crawley, and then the pledge is going to be given by one of our scouts, Alan Heiner, and then the invocation will be given by Councilmember Geddes. So, Alan Heiner, if you wouldn't mind coming forward, flags over here, and lead us in the pledge. If you can, absolutely, you can use the mic.
Pull it down a little bit if you want.
Just like that. And then say, will the audience please rise?
What did you say?
Will the audience please rise?
Yep, please. I pledge to the United States of America. One nation, under God, indivisible, justice for all.
Thank you very much. Great job, Alan. I appreciate that. Mr. Geddes.
Father in heaven, we are indeed grateful to gather today, this evening, with the City Council and this community here to discuss the matters that are before us and that may help our community grow and prosper and do things that will benefit all of our citizens and those that live in our beautiful town. We're thankful for all that you give us, for this beautiful country, and for the freedoms that we enjoy, and for those that serve in our country that give us this freedom that we are able to enjoy and protect us. Again, we thank thee for all that we have, and we pray that we might use wisdom tonight in our decisions and our discussions. And we say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Mr. Geddes. All right. Next thing we need to do is approve tonight's agenda. So, council member, would please make a motion to accept the agenda as is or amend it? I will take it now.
I move that we approve the agenda as is.
Okay. A motion to accept the agenda. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Bailey seconds
Crawley.
It. Mr. Crawley seconds it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Next is public comments. And when I
There was one. Yeah, Mr. Lauder.
Okay. Anyone else other than Darren Lauder that had signed up? Okay. Mr. Lauder, if you would like to come forward and state your name and address.
Darren Lauder, 4633 West Hill Park Circle, Cedar Hills. First, thank you, of course, all of you for your service. Rob, thank you. Mm-hmm. I know you're leaving.
My last day.
This is your last one. Mm-hmm. For your many, many, many hours of care and service.
Yeah.
I hated to miss.
Celebration.
She's gone now. After all these years.
Courtney.
Yeah, rats.
Last.
Gary, your years. Thank you. Jenny, so glad you're willing to step up and run to take this seat. Appreciate all of you. Last fall, we had a meeting, and a few of you were able to attend, with SkyDrop, a smart water system. I've been using it. You know what? When the water came on in April, for the first time, I didn't water three times a week. I wish I could say that I was on top of it in the past and that I watered less, but sometimes you don't think of it, and you water when you don't need to, okay? But that didn't happen, and I just showed Jeff, looking at this, I only watered once because the system knows that it's been cool and we've had some rain and it doesn't use it, right? I think there's even been some forgetfulness or misunderstandings as to what that system that we talked about could do, because you thought maybe that it didn't know what individual residents were doing, and it did. I remember talking about that, and I confirmed it today. But I remember in that meeting, Jeff drilled him, and I thought most every question was answered to your satisfaction. And this was a screaming deal because this company wanted a small, manageable city that they could use as a testimonial. They don't want a big city that they're going to lose a lot of money on or anything like that, but they have much bigger fish to fry, and we know that, and you know that. In California, the cities, the counties, they will do this right. They're even offering... We can test run it, a couple hundred homes. We could get that in a day for people to test it out and try it out and see if they like it. But water is our most precious asset. We cannot mess around with it. We have to stop begging people, asking people the same question every year, please conserve, and they're going to do what they're going to do. And it gets us into trouble. And our system's running out. Our system's going to break down. And if we don't do something before... we reach that point, we're in trouble. This is our most important thing to protect, right? Back in the day, we had disagreements on the council about several things, but you know what? When it came to water, forget about the Sunday alcohol, all those issues, whatever. We agreed on the backup water. Drill that thing. You don't mess around with water. Right now, we can't answer the question, who's using all that water? Who's, you know, we cannot operate that way. It's time to make a decision. If it's not a smart water system, then we pay through the nose for a full-on hard metering system. But I think this will do what we need. And we have those questions asked. And if you need to get Chad and Bart back here for another meeting like that, then I suggest you do it as fast as you can. Because at $200 a pop or whatever they were offering, first of all, the test run it for a couple months is phenomenal. That's how bad they want us. But for 50 to 75 grand for the whole city, that's insane not to take a better look at this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Darren, can I ask you one quick question?
Yeah.
Since you've had it the whole last season? Or just
since middle of summer.
Middle of summer. Yeah. Is there a pro too, or is it just, does it just measure falling? Like the moisture, it doesn't probe the moisture in the ground at all, right?
It uses the weather.
You know what? I'm not the technical guy to ask.
It uses the weather, as I recall.
That's
right?
If that's what you're asking.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
It's reading the internet within the 3 mile thing.
I should drive by your house. Does your yard look good? Does your lawn look good?
Well, I have to fertilize it.
Well,
self-admitted. I mean, it's working, but I need to do some fertilizing stuff in my lawn to be a little greener. But yeah, it works. I mean, it's.
I've got a question. Did you have to buy it, or did they just give it to you for free on a test run?
My boy was a baseball player at the time, so they just gave it to us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Anyone else care to speak during public comments? If not, I'll close that part of our meeting and move on to our public hearing, of which we have one. So this is to amend the City Code Title 10, Chapter 5, relating to bed and breakfast facilities. Has anyone come to speak on the public hearing regarding that? No? Okay. Close that and move on to our consent agenda. Looks like we have minutes from one meeting. This is the April 18th work session and City Council meeting. Someone like to make a motion on the consent agenda? I'll take that now.
I'll make a motion that we approve the consent agenda.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mrs. Reese seconds it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on to city reports and business. Starting from my left, Mr. Goodwin, go ahead.
If you bear with me, I have a little longer report tonight. We had if you notice upstairs, we have a window that's broken. And that same window was fixed on Wednesday and broken on Thursday. Or I have it wrong. It was broken on was fixed on Thursday, broken on Friday. So we're back in the looking for a new window up there. Golf ball, okay. Really bad golf swing. Our tee ball and coach's pitch baseball is getting ready to kick off. We have just under 100 kids registered this year. Lacrosse is also is ready to start this year as well. Our family festival is getting ready as well, so that's coming up. The recreation department is over the golf firecracker tournament, the 3v3 soccer and pickleball tournament will be coming up in the next few weeks. Many of you have seen that last week on Friday, the 6S group closed the grill, and so staff is currently evaluating some short-term options about what we can do as far as delivering a food option for golfers and finding a solution there, which we'll be discussing with the council at a future council meeting. Yesterday, we got a report on American Fork Canyon runoff. Ernst John, the water master of AF Irrigation, brought to our attention that Tibble Fork Reservoir has filled and was discharging at overflow. This has increased the amount of river flow significantly during the warmer days. Silver Lake is approximately 3/4 full, and it is anticipated that it will spill over in the next few days depending on weather and temperatures. The debris basin will be filling and draining as needed to control the river flow, but could easily overflow the weir as the Silver Lake and Tibble Fork uncontrolled flows increase. We are assisting in the removal of debris down in the debris basin with Highland and American Fork City. We've staged a track hoe at the basin to assist as needed. We just want to remind residents that the debris basin is closed to the public.
Pretty full, by the way.
It is pretty full, yeah. We had one of our major events last week was we had a water leak on Morgan. A report came in at about 1 a.m. Crews were on site in about 30 minutes. At that point, much of the subsurface layer of the road had been washed away, and it had even infiltrated into the sewer line. Staff responded quickly to shut off the valve and reroute the PI system at a lower capacity, but we were still able to deliver the service. And we began to address resident needs on site that we would anticipate in the coming hours, such as getting people the ability to pull out of their driveway was a major concern early in the morning. Other crews were on site to check and clear out sewer lines. Our public works crew did do an amazing job working with the residents and making the best of a difficult situation, and I want to give them a big thank you for the many long hours that they took to resolve this situation to be where we are today. American Fork Police Department invited us to go do their VIRTRA training last week. I went down there. It was very informative and insightful. It gave me a new appreciation for the many day-to-day activities that they do, such as just making a simple traffic stop. This training is a valuable resource for the American Fork police officers and other officers throughout the county, and next time that this option becomes available to the county, I would encourage you all to take advantage of it. And then the last thing is we have our candidacy filing period. We have two council seats and a mayoral seat open, and that starts in a couple of weeks. The filing deadline is June 1st through the 7th. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mrs. Reese.
Just that comedy festival is coming this month, and we still are looking for volunteers.
I could ask a question. Is there an age limit on the volunteers?
14, right? They need to be 18 unless they want to do children's games, and then it's 12. So 12 is when we can help with children's games.
Because that was asked. So I said 14, but good to know it's 12.
Yeah, 12 for the kids.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Geddes.
I don't have anything to report.
All right. So Lone Peak Public Safety, we had a board meeting last Thursday. We did approve a preliminary budget for the next year. And we will talk about this more on item number 11, but there is a very serious threat to the Lone Peak Public Safety District. There's a group in Highland that wants to blow up the district and have Highland remove themselves from it. Now, I don't know if they'll be successful, but we're meeting again Thursday night in a town hall type format. It's a work session, actually. In order to resolve some of the concerns that some of the Highland residents have about this. But make no mistake, it's a serious attempt on behalf of some Highland residents to pull out and blow up the district. And so we'll talk more about it. So,
Mayor, can you tell us what time that meeting is?
7 p.m.
Thank you.
And when you say serious and blow up, you're not meaning physically, you mean,
no,
mean take apart the district.
Highland pull out of police and fire.
Yep.
And so that would blow up the police district for sure.
Yeah.
And it would hamper the fire district to the point that Cedar Hills and Alpine would go and look for their best options. Maybe they stay together, maybe they don't. I don't know. So it's serious. Mr. Bailey.
I don't have anything to report.
Mr. Crawley.
I don't have anything to report, although this is my last time at council meeting, so I feel a privilege to have served and appreciated the opportunity.
We appreciate all the service that you've provided to our city, Mr. Crawley, so thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Zappala.
I have one item. The Parks and Trails Committee is going to be meeting this Thursday in 2 days. at 6 p.m. at the Roundabout to plant flowers. It's our final step in finishing that up. They haven't necessarily invited anyone to come, but you are more than welcome to come and help out if you'd like to plant some flowers.
Is that it?
That's it. Other than that, I'd just like to wish Rob good luck and offer him a round of applause for his service here on the council.
Thank you. All right. I'm moving on now with our scheduled items. We do have an action item, which is item number 8. It's an ordinance amending Title 10, Chapter 5, relating to bed and breakfast facilities. Mr. Goodwin, I think you're presenting.
The code that we're proposing to amend is in Title 10, 525, Beast 2. It's regarding a bed and breakfast facilities in the city. It reads, the structure proposed for use as a bed and breakfast facility is listed as a historic structure on the state or national register of historic sites, or the city council shall have passed a resolution designating the structure as a historic structure of local significance. On research, we have no historical buildings in our city, so we felt that this provision should be struck from the code and give residents the opportunity, if they feel the need, to do more of a bed and breakfast Airbnb type facility out of their home. So we've already, currently we have 3 Airbnbs in the home in the city. We get complaints on one of them, but the complaints are really related more around parking, nuisance violations type situations. So that's what we're proposing today, is to have this provision struck from the code. Are there any questions?
I'm just curious as to why it was ever in there to begin with. Do we know?
My best guess is that usually cities don't write their own code. They copy and paste from other cities if they find that it's working, and this is a provision that another city had, and it just found its way in our code.
Are there any buildings that could ever, I mean, ever is a long time, but that do constitute a historic or getting close to that?
I can't think of any.
I can't either.
My house is getting pretty old.
Okay. I'll go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if there's no more questions, then I will accept a motion at this point.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve ordinance 5162017-A related to Title 10, Chapter 5, Section 25 related to bed and breakfast facilities by striking the historical structure requirement.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mrs. Reese seconds it. Any further discussion? Okay, let's have a vote, starting with Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on to item number 10, also an action item, on final acceptance of subdivision improvements and beginning of durability for Bridgestone Platts F and G. Mr. Mogg.
Yes, Council and Mayor. Staff has completed the inspections and evaluation of the Bridgestone Platt F and G subdivision and have found that it's in compliance with their plans. We received a letter of recommendation from the city engineer, Bowen Collins and Associates, with their recommendation. I think you've got a copy of that. In discussions after that letter was received, we did ask for additional language added to that. I'd like to bring that to your attention. Second paragraph, last sentence. We added language. It says, before the durability retainer can be released, Bridgestone Cedar Hills LC will need to complete all items listed in the attached bond release inspection report provided by the Cedar Hills Public Works Director dated May 2nd, 2017. Then the additional language is, as well as any other deficiencies found at the final durability inspection. We just wanted to include that, so when we do the final walkthrough, we would be able to enforce that. So at this time, it's recommended that City Council accept the development, the city portion of that development, and to approve the release of the bond amount of $125,000, with the remainder of the development bond to be changed to the durability retainer.
Which we just changed last week, correct, to 5%, or what is it, 10%?
It's 10% 1 year.
And it used to be 20, right? Is that
yes.
what it was now?
20
so now
in 2 years.
It's 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
I know durability isn't that important, but has the HOA weighed in on this one yet? Or do
no.
they need to?
They don't. The bond is actually for the city infrastructure,
public,
sewer, water, storm. Well, actually, they even have their own stormwater there. So it's basically sidewalks, the streets, sewer, water.
What is F&G of those? I mean, where? I mean,
F is a very small single unit that got broken off. It was actually. Started
on the east side by the school. Is that
yes?
Okay, that one.
Yes, on the south side in the corner, and then G is the remainder of that section north of Bridgestone Drive.
Sort of the newer one.
Yes.
The new where all the Garbett homes are.
Yes, this is all for Garbett. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Mogg on this? Not, I will entertain a motion on item number 9.
I move that we approve the acceptance of the subdivision improvements for the Bridgestone subdivision plat F&G improvements and release the performance bond and the submission of the durability bond with the language changes suggested by Mr. Mogg.
Thank you. I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Bailey seconds it. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Starting from my right, Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese. The motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving
Thanks.
On to item number 10 now. This is a discussion only on metering, pressurized irrigation. So, Mr. Crawley wanted this on the agenda. Mr. Zappala seconded it. We did have a little bit of discussion earlier when Mr. Louder, that's who was here, talked about this, but we will discuss it much more at length now. And so, Mr. Crawley, I don't know if you want to lead out, and you had asked for this to be on the agenda, so I'm going to give some time to you.
Okay. I just wanted to list the reasons why I'm against it, actually. And I put together 14 this morning. We don't know what the cost will be, but I've heard from $1.5 million to $2.5 million, but we don't know the exact cost. There has to be a really good reason to go into that debt for me to approve something like that. I did put as number 2, everyone's yard will need to be invaded and torn up where the meter will be installed. Mayor Gigi mentioned that may be a little bit too harsh of words for that, but yeah, they do have to put it somewhere and they have to dig. And in my case, they didn't really contact me telling me where they were going to do it or anything. So it could be a surprise and you might lose something that was there. I don't know. There will be a cost associated with monitoring and billing based on the usage. We have no proof the usage will decrease substantially with metering. Number 5, we have plenty of water for use in the system. As long as people follow the even odd watering schedule, the system does not get overloaded. At least it hasn't in the 10 years I've been here, maybe once or twice it has, but not since the even odd days have been implemented. We have several backup water sources in case there's a temporary failure of one water source. Although the scare tactic used is that a pump can go down at peak watering season, and it's presented as if getting metering will resolve this issue. It doesn't really resolve that issue. A pump can go down anytime. It doesn't matter if you're metering or not. It doesn't know whether you're metering. It does reduce the. It's possible it could reduce the pressure on the pump. So I'll give it that. But we can buy a spare pump for about $60,000, which was 1/25th of the minimum cost of meters to keep on hand to lessen any potential downtime due to a pump failure. When the pressurized irrigation system was implemented, this is number 9, the selling point to the residents was that no matter how much you use, there is one small base price. Number 10, more government oversight and monitoring with more staff needs. Number 11, future costs of fixing and replacing broken meters. Number 12, if the state government wants to push cities to do this in the future, they may help fund it. Number 13, no matter how it is funded, it still has to be paid for ultimately by us, either through city, state, federal, or sales tax. Number 14, residents have spoken out against this in the past. So those were my points this morning against it. The items for it to me seem not certain at best, so that's the end of my arguments at this point.
Thank you. So there used to be a television show called Point Counterpoint. So here's Mr. Crowley's point, Mr. Zappala, if you guys counterpoint.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really not interested in making a counterpoint. What I'd like the council to consider tonight is I'd like to consider the facts that we have collected as a council and from our staff. And I'd like the council to think about what we're going to do given the reality of the situation that we're facing. I'd like to review the steps that we've gone through so far. We commissioned a study from a firm called Hanson Allen and Luce Engineers. And what this firm did was they ran through, they modeled our system and then they ran it through a simulation to simulate various scenarios of what could happen. There's a long list of scenarios in the report that I can provide to you. I've discussed them on my blog at length. But I want to draw attention to two scenarios in particular. And this is coming directly from the report. They said, if the Harvey or Cottonwood whales fail, either one of those, the city could increase deliveries from the north CUP turnout to deliver water to the system. So they're saying, we do have a different source where we could get water from if the Harvey or Cottonwood whales fail. But then they add this, however, this is a short-term situation only because the quantity of CUP water the city can use is limited by contract. And then they add, even in this case, so even in the case that we are getting water from the CUP, the city would need to take immediate action to reduce demand on the system so that we could avoid high velocities in the booster pump. So what the engineering report is telling us is that in the case that a well fails, we can cover the water that's missing for a short period of time. But even when we're covering that extra water, we need to somehow get residents to significantly reduce demand so that the system can continue pumping. And we don't currently have a way of doing that realistically. We can't just turn off water to sections of the city and say, you can't have it. And so more realistically, what will happen is that residents will use the water and then the system will run dry. So that's one scenario they covered. The other scenario they covered was irrigation water. It's pumped up the hill to the top above the homes. And then now that it's uphill, it flows downhill to cover a significant portion of our city. And this is what they said. If one of those pumps at pond 10 or 11 fails, they said there is enough redundancy in the pumps that we can get by. But normally these pumps cycle on and off so they're not overworked. If one of them fails, then the others would need to stay on for longer periods, which increases likelihood that another failure occurs. In this case, the city would need to take immediate action to reduce demand on the system unless we had already reduced demand due to conservation measures, meaning we had already installed meters and gotten people to reduce their usage. So in the situation where a pump at pond 10 or 11 fails, it's quite likely the other one will fail, and now we really are not having any water in our PI system to pump uphill anymore and to service a large section of the city. So the engineers did find two situations in that report where our system was at risk in case of a major component failure. We then had a water conservation committee that was a resident committee that met and said, all right, what are we going to do? What kinds of steps can we take? There's a full report of that on the city website, and I've also covered that in my blog. But our resident committee recommended we proceed with meters. I've been around the city for 12 years, and one of the biggest frustrations is when we create a resident committee, and they give us the recommendations, and then the council ignores them and say, we're just not going to take your recommendation, we're not going to do that. It's happened repeatedly, and this is another case where our resident said, this is what we think we should do, and the council said no. I think that's an issue that we ought to grapple with. The third thing we've done is we then commissioned another study, this one by Bowen Collins and Associates, to look at more of the financial aspects of installing pressurized irrigation meters. And they looked at four alternatives. They looked at alternative one, which was not installing PI meters at all, which is the status quo. They looked at alternative two, which was installing them immediately and paying them off with a five-year bond. Alternative 3, which is installing them and paying them with a 10-year bond. And alternative 4, which is install them in the future and pay off the cash reserves. So wait until we had accumulated enough money in that fund. And then just here's what they said. This is also directly from the report. It said, due to the additional wear and tear on the PI system from overconsumption, it has been assumed that approximately $300,000 of capital improvements would be required approximately every 5 years. So because we're running our system at high capacity, we have to spend $300,000 every 5 years on maintenance. Beginning in fiscal year 2019, if meters are delayed or not installed. So starting next year, and every 5 years thereafter, paying $300,000 in maintenance because we're overrunning our system beyond its design capacity. If PI meters are installed, they say, capital cost of irrigation pump replacement will decrease substantially. It has been assumed that once PI meters are installed, approximately half of that amount, $150,000 of capital improvements, would be required every 10 years. So half as much over twice as long of a period. That's saying that if PI meters are installed, rather than spending $600,000 over a 10-year period, we spend $150,000. We save $450,000 by installing the PI meters. They then say there are also likely to be significant operation and maintenance savings that must be considered in the case that PI meters are installed. They've estimated that approximately $70,000 in utility costs can be saved per year once PI meters are installed due to decreased pumping demand on the system. So that means spending less on electricity to run those pumps all the time, pump that water uphill. Over the estimated 20-year life cycle of the meters, those annual savings would total approximately $1.4 million. Okay, so we're adding up $1.4 million in savings from electricity costs of pumping, plus another $450,000 in capital costs. We're now at $1.8 million that we can save by installing the meters. They then conclude by saying, considering all the costs, the net costs of each alternative are as follows. They say if we do nothing, alternative one is $1.2 million is what we'll have to spend. So we save $700,000, according to this report, if we install PI meters right away and get a short-term 5-year bond on it. Alternative three, which is a 10-year bond, we pay $700,000. So we're still saving $500,000 if we use that alternative. And then alternative four, which is waiting to save up the money, actually is worse. It costs us $1.6 million. So the recommendation from that report was you should think seriously about installing meters. It's going to save you some significant money over the period that the report studied. So that's kind of where we're at, is we've received strong recommendations from our staff that we should do this. We received recommendations from an engineering report, received recommendations from residents, and received recommendations from the Bowen and Collins study saying this really makes sense financially. So I'm stuck here saying, why are we not doing this? We probably ought, as a council, ought to move forward and do this. We've gotten four strong recommendations. And I'd like to hear from the council, are we going to do this? Are we instead going to go the smart meter route that Mr. Ladder suggested? I really would prefer we don't sit and do nothing.
I have a few counterpoints, if that's okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
And then I'll get to Mrs. Reese. I know she may have some concerns about it as well.
Do you know what percentage decrease they planned on having with the metering to get to their millions of dollars in savings?
I'd have to dig into the report.
I will tell you that they're saying $70,000 in savings in the electricity. The total cost for the year is $170,000 for the PI system, for all the pumps. That's a 40% decrease in usage that they're using based on that, and that's very unreasonable. So I know we've had
a 40% decrease in water use. That's a 40% decrease in electricity.
Right.
Because we're not having to pump as much.
Right, but it pumps a certain amount per hour. That translates across pro rata.
Doesn't necessarily directly translate.
Yes, it's probably close, though. It would be less because there's probably some fixed cost, so it probably really means a 50 or 60% decrease.
Our utility electricity budget is $320,000 per year.
But that includes culinary.
Right, but most of the pumping is probably...
I've got it all broken out between culinary and PI on my computer here. I'm giving it to Chandler after this meeting. The other thing that I wanted to mention was that it didn't mention that AF has a backup plan for us too, because we supply water to them and they supply water to us when we're in need, as well as the Harvey well that we've been able to utilize that in the past, the extra usage from that. Another thing that has been mentioned is the system could run dry.
it wouldn't run dry, it would just lose pressure, which, you know, worst case scenario is we have our grass grow not quite as green for a little bit. That's the worst case. It's not worth $2 million to me to avoid that, and it hasn't happened once since I've lived here for 10 years. Also,
you threw out a number, $2 million, mm-hmm. ignoring the cost savings that Bowen and Collins estimated that we actually save money going this way.
Right, that's true. There would be some cost savings, I'll give it that. I don't think it's $2 million. $300,000 every 5 years starting in 2019. I'm not so sure I believe in that number either, because if you get 5, 10% usage decrease, does that mean the pipes are going to last how much longer? I just don't believe that number either. But anyway, that's about all I have to say.
Okay, thank you. Mrs. Reese, you want to say something?
Sure. Well, if you'll give me a few minutes as well, because I've done a ton of research on this.
Go ahead.
So I also have, I understand the need and the urgency when it comes to conservation, but I do still have concerns with going the water metering approach. And so there are a few reasons. First, from the studies that I've done, secondary water meters don't always result in conservation, especially if you have a socioeconomic area that can afford the increase in rates. And so in the Weber Basin Conservancy District up in Ogden, they have been installing meters, testing things out, and they, the Standard Examiner up there published an article in 2015. They were talking with a gentleman who was speaking about California, which was also in a drought. According to this article, they said that Californians pay water rates about 74% higher than Utahns, but overwatering hasn't gone away there. Just last summer, water use in the Parch State increased by 1% instead of going down by their targeted 20%, even with California policymakers passing a $500 a day fine for overwatering. And he was quoted as saying, no matter where you go, water is not that expensive compared to what you're putting it on. It's noise for some people compared to the investment in landscaping and what the house is worth. So I know that Spanish Fork has implemented secondary meters, and that they have said that they've seen a reduction in usage. And so I compared Spanish Fork to Cedar Hills. The average annual income in Spanish Fork is $68,000 approximately, and the average home value is $214,000. In Cedar Hills, the average annual income is $97,000, and the average home value is $343,000. So you may have a different demographic of users who see a spike in water rates, but determine that their value in landscaping and their home values are worth paying for that usage, and we don't see the reduction, which is what we were trying to accomplish with the water meters.
Jenny, can I just interject there for 1 second?
After I'm done, you may.
Sure.
Second, studies have shown that educating users on consumption also helps reduce usage. So like I said, Weber Basin up in Ogden, they installed water meters on several homes in Ogden, but they didn't change rates. They didn't. They left it at a flat fee, and what they started doing was providing to these residents monthly just information on how much water that they were using. And they found that even doing that without changing the billing cycle at all, they saw a decrease in usage. And so, let's see, in 3 years they saw that that Weber, in Weber County, that the average household used 83% of their 83% of their 1 acre foot water allocation in 2012, but by 2014 that figure dropped to 60%. Overwatering dropped from 26% in 2012 to 9% in 2013. And so in that article, the CEO of Weber Basin said, how much water costs is one motivation, but people in general have values related to not being wasteful, using their fair share, and being reasonable in the amount of water they're using in comparison to others. So if people become aware of the fact that their use is considered inefficient, or they're using a lot more water than they really need, many of them are motivated to conserve by doing right as members of society. And then Tage Flint, a professor from USU, Tage Flint, who's the CEO of the Weber Basin Water Conservancy District, said that new technologies are helping to boost water conservation. And when a homeowner installs a smart controller, which is SkyDrop is one of those smart controllers, they're seeing overnight a 30 to 200% reduction in water use. Kelly Kopp, who's a professor of plant soils and climate at Utah State University, said that the future of irrigation is going to focus on technology, and smart irrigation controllers are a big part of that, with huge potential water savings. Brittany Hunter, who's an assistant professor in horticulture at Davis County USU Extension, said that if everyone in Davis County replaced their irrigation timer with a smart controller, the average home would save about 8,800 gallons of water annually. So the last time we talked about this, I mentioned that in California, they had installed water meters, and now they're starting installing controllers on top of their water meters because they found the water meters weren't enough. They weren't seeing a reduction. And so the smart controllers were actually what they were seeing reduce water consumption because it's easy that people won't have to try to figure out what's my water bill going to be this month. They can just set it, and it's watering based on need instead of on odd even days or whatever the case may be. So another issue I have is that as I think about conservation, I really feel strongly that this effort, if conservation is the big key, then it has to come from the state. And my concern is that I've been told our wells draw from aquifers, and we have other cities nearby that are draining those same aquifers, Lehigh being one that we share aquifers with. And
no.
Yes.
Future growth will only increase the demand on that aquifer.
Yes, exactly. So, and Lehigh is exploding. And so if we are implementing measures to conserve water, but cities like Lehigh are not, and they're using the aquifers, any conservation we do is going to be pretty minimal if the larger cities like Lehigh are pulling from those aquifers faster than we can conserve. So conservation is important, but I think if that's our focus, that has to come at a state level, because if everyone's not doing it, so smaller cities like us, we're not going to receive the benefit of the conservation efforts that we're putting in if larger cities are just pulling from those aquifers. Another one was wear and tear in the system. I'm still not sure that metering will fix it, because again, if we don't see a reduction in water, that's not going to resolve the wear and tear issue. We have Bowen and Collins come out a couple times and do studies on our infrastructure, and they've always told us not to raise our PI rates. And so I don't know if that's because they're anticipating that we don't need to upgrade as quickly, as soon as we think that we may, but I'm interested in maybe hearing from Bowen and Collins again to come out and say, if we think we're going to have to improve our PI systems more frequently than their original two studies that they've done, it might make more sense to adjust those PI rates based on wear and tear than just going straight to meters, especially when we're not 100%, we're not guaranteed that water meters are going to reduce consumption, and we might have to continue to upgrade those faster anyway. On the paying for what you use, I get that market principle, but I agree with Rob. That used to be what we had, is we had culinary water that we used to water our lawns, and everyone paid for what they used. And then the city really presented to residents the benefit of going to a PI system was that they could use all the PI water that they wanted for this flat rate. And I don't know who did the study. They obviously didn't take into account the fact that if you offer people an unlimited amount of something for a flat fee, that usage was going to increase. But now going back to residents and saying, actually, that selling point that we told you isn't working, now we want to go back to what we were to begin with, which is paying for what you use. I can see why so many residents are frustrated with that approach. And I don't want to go down a road where we implement yet another fix to a problem, and if it doesn't fix the problem, then we're going to have to go back to residents again later saying, well, that didn't work either, so now we're going to have to do this next thing. So if it was up to me, I would like to see us as a city increase education efforts, which may even require us to maybe get some outside help with that marketing process to explain to residents the benefits of smart controller systems, of water conservation. The controllers from the studies that I've done, they range from about $100 to $300, and many of the water districts in the state are offering rebates up to half the cost up to $150. So if you bought the SkyDrop one, which is $300, you could get half of it back, and some of them are even less than that. I'm open to the city looking at a possible rebate program in addition to say, we want to motivate our residents to get onto a smart controller. So if you can show proof of installation of one of the approved ones on the list, that we would do a rebate. I would love to eliminate watering restrictions days for those people who use smart controllers. Instead of having odds evens, they can water whatever day the smart controller tells it to come on, because it may be that they only have to water every 3 days, every 4 days, depending on what's going on with the weather. I'd really like to see us talking to someone with at the state, because I have a big concern that technology is quickly advancing and now smart meters are happening. And if we go down a road and do one sort of meter and later the state says, actually, we think you need to do a smart controller or a smart meter, and we've already done one thing that's not going to comply with what the state wants, again, we're going to incur the cost of having to go through that whole process. So I would like to see a lot more thought and input from a state level and even in our city to make sure that we're doing the right thing, because I don't want to go down the path again of thinking that we know that this is going to fix a problem and then a few years later we're just discussing this once again.
Thank you. I think this has been a really good discussion.
So I want to make a couple of quick comments.
Go ahead.
While I refresh my mind based on what Jenny said, I really appreciate your input. I think there's a lot of good things that you had to share. On the point of we end up charging people more for water and we are in a high socioeconomic area and so they'll just pay extra and they won't reduce their usage. Two things I want to say on that point. One is I really firmly believe that we have to have a system where people pay for what they use. I think that's just a strong market principle. But second, if people choose to ignore that price signal and say, you know what, I don't care if you're charging me more, I'll just pay the extra $100 a month on my water bill. Well, guess what? We're now charging those people who are using more and putting more wear and tear on our system for replacing the components. And if I choose to conserve water, my bill will go down and I won't have to pay extra for those components. So we're charging exactly the right people to pay for the extra wear and tear and replacing these motors every time they wear out. If we stay with the status quo and we keep charging everybody the same flat rate, now I'm having to pay to replace all that expensive equipment, even though I've taken extensive steps to reduce the watering that I'm doing on my lawn. So that just seems inherently unfair to me when we're running a city program, that we spread those costs among everybody.
I agree with that, but that's what the city sold the residents on.
Well, and on that issue, I've never had the city tell me that. And I've never was aware that the city made that kind of a pitch.
Yeah, because we used to water with coal.
That must have been an awfully long time ago, because I moved in 12 years ago.
Well,
and I never had the city make that pitch to me. I didn't build my house based on that pitch. I didn't move in based on that pitch.
So I've been here the whole time. So I was here when the PI was in, but then was not. Then you had to put meters in. So I think it happened about 2006 or 7. So I moved in, and I've been here 6 or 7 years, I think, and. I don't remember the city saying, hey, use all you want. It's a great, let's all for a flat fee. I think they said that we're going to have a flat fee, but it's year round. Just because
things, you know, we weren't in a drought back then either, and things change. And so sometimes you have to make changes to policy. And I'm a huge free market person. I tend to agree that you should pay for what you use. I mean, there isn't a utility out there that you don't. I mean, if it's the same logic, if Rocky Mountain Power said, hey, you pay one flat fee for your electricity, doesn't matter what you use, my AC would be down to 60, you know, in the summertime. But it's just that's the market force. And so, but I am conflicted by the whole notion of, you know, what is the state going to do in the future? And I don't want to incur a lot of expense. I like going down the road where maybe we can give incentives for smart meters and things like that. But let me tell you, I had in my neighborhood probably 20 people last year come up to me and say, you know, my neighbor's sprinklers are on every single night for like an hour a station. And I've called the city and, you know, people don't get it. I mean, no matter what we do for conservation. And I don't know. I mean, I'm conflicted. I agree with Daniel a lot on this because
so I want to
they
say
don't care.
Let me say just a few words on that because we've tried education a number of times. We've tried informing residents. And I'm a fairly strong believer that education doesn't work, which I'm in the field of education.
Are you sure you're in the right field?
Very, very sad thing, but in my field, we study security, and in particular, usable security, where it touches humans. And there's a set of people in our community who say, all we need to do is educate people about the risks that they take online and educate them about the risks of hackers that they might be putting themselves at risk for. And we have to educate them about what steps they should take to protect themselves. And then we'll finally get people to use security software and finally get them to patch their Windows system with the latest updates and we'll get them to be safe. And you know what? They've been trying that for 10 years and it does not work. Trying to educate people and getting them to change their behavior just simply doesn't work. And we saw that in our own city. We've run an education campaign in the past couple years.
And I believe our usage went down by 1 or 2%, 3%. It really doesn't work to change behavior. What changes behavior is, A, you either do something for people, right? And so right now in the security field, the reason why people are being secure is we've built applications that are automatically secure. So there's nothing they have to turn on or off. It just happens for them. Okay, so that would be the equivalent. We install a meter. It's going to happen for them, and you could maybe like force them to use less water. Nobody's proposing that. The other alternative, if you're not going to force people to have certain behavior or do it for them automatically, is you give them a market signal. You give them a price signal that says, look, here's how much water you're using, and you're going to pay less if you use less water. Now, the equivalent for that for smart controllers would be some of the good things that I like about what Jenny said is we give people an incentive to install a controller. We tell them, hey, look, we'll kick in an extra $20 rebate or an extra $30 rebate if you install a smart controller over and above what the state would provide. That gives someone a monetary incentive to have that behavior that we're looking for. The other incentive might be telling them, hey, we can eliminate watering restrictions on you. You can water any day of the week if you have a smart controller. As long as you let that smart controller stay in charge, you don't turn it on manually with your phone every single day, if you're actually doing what the smart metering system tells you to do, we'll take off restrictions for you. That gives them another incentive. Incentives work, education doesn't.
When I say education, I mean educating residents on how much water they're using. And that's where I'm saying Weber Basin did this three-year study, and they are saying education works because they didn't change their rate structure. They did not bill people for what they used. They just gave them the data every month, and they saw a lot of dramatic decreases in usage.
And that might be a way to ease into this whole thing, too. I mean, I like that notion of what they did because they said, okay, you're still going to pay exactly the same, but now you know.
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of like the annoying Rocky Mountain Power thing that I get every couple months that says, by the way, your neighbors, you're the worst offender in your neighborhood. That's how mine is. I don't know how yours is. Maybe you're the best.
I think they say it to everybody whether they're the worst.
Although lately, because I'm becoming more of an empty nester, I'm sort of more on the middle, but I'm still worse than my neighbors. I've never been better than my neighbors. So,
hey, Jenny, I wanted to say something too. The reason I was against the smart, what do they call that again?
Sky drop.
When they came, as it seemed like they were forcing it on the whole group. They wanted us to commit for the whole city, and I don't like the idea of taking away someone's free agency of whether they can what they have to use in their on their own yard. But you mentioned using incentives, and I thought that makes it, you know, their choice, and I really like that as long as it's a short term, like a year incentive, because you never know if it's going to still cost, you know, if you give everyone incentives, you may not have enough money to cover your costs, and you have to raise costs for everybody, but give everyone a year incentive, $5 off or $10 off per month for a year, and I think that solves a lot of problems.
And I look at it, recycling. I don't know what percentage we have, what take we have on recycling. But residents have no fight.
It's low.
I want to say it's less than 20.
Yeah. And so in that situation, people are actually paying to recycle, but they're doing it because they have a desire to help and to recycle. And I think
we do have a financial incentive there. It's less than a second garbage can.
But if you don't need a second garbage can, you're just paying for an extra can.
Right.
And some people are doing that. Some people don't need to. And so anyway, my point is, but from what Weber Basin saw when they did their three-year study without any change in water rates was that people did conserve when they knew. And the smart, I think the hard part with the sprinkling systems, at least from my perspective, is you just want to set it at the beginning of the year and not have to worry about it because you're gone and you're doing things and you don't want to have to constantly be trying to figure out what you need to do with your water. And so a lot of people just turn it on at the beginning of the season and program it, and then they turn it off again in October. Where the smart controllers keep that same mentality. They can just set it, and the smart controller is helping them figure out what they need to, when they need to water based on the soil in that zone and how much sunlight that zone gets and what the water or what the weather patterns are. There are some smart controllers that do have probes. Some only just do the weather patterns. But it still makes it easier for people just to set it and not worry about it. It gives them continual data on how much water that they're using, so they're aware. And that's what I meant by education, is helping residents understand how much they're using. Because right now, I think most people, myself included, you just don't know how much water you're using. So.
All right. Thank you. So there is a lot of data here. And so
We need to figure this out. I've been talking about this for 6 years in terms of reducing our consumption of water. And if some smart technology works, I'm open to that. Our former city manager did not like SkyDrop. He said that there were better products. So I'm going to talk with Chandler, and we're going to look at different products and report back to you. I will meet with the governor's office and talk about what their plan is with water, and then we'll just report back to you. Doing nothing is not a very good option. And so for the 18 years that I've been here, I know we have tried so many different methods as a city, none of which really work to encourage residents to conserve their water. So we don't have a solution yet. And if some of this smart technology can work, then we can educate the residents on that. I don't like force feeding the residents something, and maybe some of them don't want it. So figuring out a market-based solution to that is probably the best route. So anyways, we will report back. Mr. Mauger, you wanting to say something? Come on.
What he's coming up, just a recommendation. I know Weber Basin, they've been testing out, I think, 10 or so smart controllers to figure out which ones they think work best. So it might be good to reach out to them.
The only other thing,
we've
reviewed some of their proposals, some of their reports. We're looking at some of them today.
Okay. So we'll look at all of this.
I would just ask, too, that the 3% reduction, does that take into account the growth, too? Is that per capita production or just overall production?
It's simply year-over-year use.
So it may be a little bit higher than that because of a growth.
We have
got a little bit.
It's hard to attribute that to one specific thing, whether that's odd, even water. I mean, the city put some smart controllers on their own parks, so it very well could have been, that could have been a large portion of the production as well. But it's hard to attribute to one thing.
Thanks.
Mr. Mogg, go ahead.
Yeah, one of the considerations that seems to get overlooked is our annual reporting to the Division of Water, the state water usage. Each year we are required as a city, all providers are required to send in an annual report on the amount of water that we produce, where it comes from, and how much leakage we have. This was separated this year in that we took irrigation, and now we have two reports, one culinary, one irrigation. The culinary report requires that we document and submit how much leakage we have in our system, and they've indicated that this will be adopted into our irrigation water in the future. And the way we do that is we know how much water we produce, and we know how much water is consumed on our culinary water through meter usage, and the difference is our loss or leakage. And most all systems leak. I mean, there's always leakage, some more than others. Fortunately, I think ours is probably less than some jurisdictions, but something to consider, and especially if you're talking to the state, when do they anticipate doing this? Because at some point in time, we have to be able to measure the water that's consumed in order to determine what the leakage is. I just wanted that to be added into the discussion, that we'll, at some point in time, we're going to have to report that number, and the only way to do that is to measure production and usage.
We will incorporate that in with our discussions.
Jeff, quick question on that. Would the state be satisfied with metering that was sort of at a neighborhood level if we install a meter in the system there, or are they really needing the usage per home in order to calculate those leaks?
That's not been brought up or discussed at any of our meetings or trainings that we've been to. It's pretty much consumers and production and the difference. That might be a viable option, though. I mean, it's difficult with a system like ours that loops everywhere because you can't really isolate any given area.
So there's not T's in the system that say this is the water's going here.
Right.
Okay. I didn't realize that.
Mr. Bailey.
Just the council seems a little divided on this. Just so that everybody knows where I'm at, I like Jenny's idea on this one. So that's where I'm. I mean, obviously we're not going to vote on anything tonight.
No.
The reason is because the inherent not the inherent, but the upfront cost for meters is a lot of money that we're going to have to go bond for. Personally, just on my own home, I would rather come up with $200 and try a smart system than come up with how much is a meter going to cost on average per home.
You're looking at probably about $750.
And that's installed?
That's the meter installed as well.
So I'd rather, you know, come out of pocket $200 to try and see if modern technology has advanced enough. But that's where I'm at. I'm obviously, it's just discussion and you know, at any time. Daniel does throw out a great argument and the mayor as well.
Honestly think we're going to need to do both at some point in time. If there's enough people on the council that are thinking the smart meter idea is a good idea, we could at least give direction to staff to say, hey, let's bring back at a future meeting
our
options for what we can do to encourage smart meters.
Because we do need to do something. Yeah. That is true.
If I can just address the smart metering or the smart controller, water controller, the SkyDrop option is a very expensive option, but it's not the only game in town. There's a number of options. Some of them are very cheap. There's Rainbird, which is a locally owned company, which does, I think, anywhere from as low as $100 up to some of these higher end with the fancier bells and whistles like SkyDrop. I installed one this year in my home, but you know what? When I was setting it up, I still set it up to the Monday, Wednesday, Friday when I'm allowed to water. So even though it's a smart water, it's a dumb meter for all intents and purposes. So I think that there's some things that we can explore as staff incentives, whether that's an incentive in your rate, an incentive of your time of use. I think that's something that we can come back to the council with a proposal on.
Yeah. Okay. The other thing that he mentioned was if we can, to Jeff, do it by neighborhoods, just, you know, find the leakage and all that.
My initial concern on that is the size of those pipes are typically 6-8-inch pipes. Neighborhoods.
Yeah, those meters are ridiculously expensive.
So you're back to that discussion we had with Highland Gardens on how expensive some of these meters are. And in order to capture all of the neighborhoods, we're talking a lot of money. So that would be my one concern there.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's move on to our last item, which is a discussion on Lone Peak Public Safety District. This is item number 11. So you want to set the table, Chandler?
Sure, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Last week, the Lone Peak Public Safety Board met and approved their preliminary budget as required by state code. I wanted to go over that with you. The Cedar Hills portion, we've projected in our budgeting process this year, I think it was 3.5%. 3.5%, yeah. And it's broken up into three portions of the Lone Peak budget. There's an administrative budget, a fire budget, and a police budget. We do not contribute to the police budget as we pay American Fork directly. The fire budget is set to increase 1% for Cedar Hills from $653,000 to $659,000. The admin portion is set to increase from $21,757 to $27,170. This is to help fund an HR professional, HR legal professional for the district to address many of the internal concerns that they've had. We wanted you to be aware of these changes. One other thing that I wanted the council and the mayor to be aware of is I wanted to remind you that in our meeting in January, when we talked about when we were setting our council priorities for the upcoming year, one of them was to get a handle, an understanding, and a plan for our public safety costs going out 5 to 10 years. And just a couple of things I wanted to point out was that our American Fork contract expires in 2 years. The Lone Peak buyout option also is a two-year period. Not buyout period, the Lone Peak notice period. If you're going to leave the district, you have to give them two-year notice. As a city, I would like to openly explore some of these options that the city has, whether that's with American Fork, whether that's Pleasant Grove. Our best option could be with Lone Peak, but I think that in order to get the best value for the city, we do have to openly explore those options. So that's all I was going to say about that.
So I agree with that. That doesn't mean that we're going to do anything, but having sat on the safety board for 6 years now, there are some good things that come up being part of the safety district, and there are some bad things. So in my opinion,
Cedar Hills has never been treated as equal partners on the safety district. We're always the redheaded stepchild. And so Highland, as I mentioned, not Highland City, even though this may be being pushed by one of the elected officials, there's an organized group of Highland residents that clearly want Highland City to pull out of the safety district. And so Cedar Hills should just look at our options. That's all Chandler and I are saying is that we may have the best options that are available to us right now, or we may not. And it's always good to keep your options open.
One other thing I forgot to mention I wanted to bring up. I sat down with Councilmember Bailey, who's a member of the district, and wanted to go through and get a better understanding of their budget. And during that conversation, we had an idea, and I wanted to share that with the council. If you go back years past, the Lone Peak had a large number of budgeted revenues for grants, and that was due to Councilmember Bailey writing those grants. They had the SAFER grant during that time, and during that time he was writing grants, he received over $1 million in grants for the district. Currently, the district is budgeting for $20,000 in grants. I feel that number is incredibly low for what kind of public and private grants are available. So I'm going to make a proposal to Lone Peak that Cedar Hills, in addition to what they're already doing, Lone Peak would continue to write the grants that they're currently writing. I would offer the services of our grant writer, who's very good, Laurie Peterson. She gets the city a number of grants. She does very excellent work. And we up that number, and in turn, the district helped pay for her. I think that helps to alleviate some of the pressure on the Lone Peak Fire budget. I've spoken with Mayor Gigi, Councilmember Bailey, one of the other city administrators, and Chief Freeman on it. And in just one afternoon of perusing what types of public safety grants are out there, we've found 15 in an hour. And I know Councilmember Bailey is aware of many of them, as well as the fire chief is well aware of other grants that are out there. So there's public and private money that is ready to be had. We just need somebody to do the legwork to get it. So this is a proposal I'm going to be making to the district.
One other thing, I want to be clear on something just so there's no misunderstanding. Ben and all the firefighters are awesome. So my beef is not with the firefighters, the Lieutenant Ludlow. It's not with the rank and file anywhere. My beef is more with how the board has treated Cedar Hills and how American Fork City has treated us. And that's why we should just look at our options. Maybe we have great options already, but maybe we look around. But the hand could be forced on us where if Highland pulls out, then I know that Cedar Hills and Alpine will both look at what's in the best interest of both of their cities. And maybe a district can be operated with just Alpine and Cedar Hills. Maybe it can't. But things are changing. Mr. Bailey,
I do want to say something. So in full disclosure, I am a battalion chief with the Lone Peak Fire District. In my personal best interest, since we stay together as the fire district, as Lone Peak, but I'm going to agree with what's being said. What's best for the citizens may be what's not best for me. We need to look at our options, and I fully 100% support that. Even if, like I say, if it hurts my income somehow, which it very well could, I am completely in support, because I see how the other the board members, like Mayor Gigi said, treat us, and some of these other cities and how. So as a council member, I would strongly suggest and ask that we do go out and see if we can get a better service, and if not, great, but you know, and if the time comes where I got to figure out what I got to do for me and my family, I'll cross that bridge. But this is about the city, not about Ben Bailey. It's about the city, and so I fully support going out there and finding what's best for the city, 100%.
Okay, very good. Any other further comments? If not, I will take a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
I have a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Geddes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. We're adjourned. Thank you very much.